Hello, I'm Johan, and welcome to a what some would call very delayed episode 9 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. Safe to say I'm back now, and the world decided to stay interesting while I was away. So, we're looking at a huge climate agreement in Paris, an agreement that is somewhat unprecedented in that 195 different countries all managed to agree on a set of ideas and goals. State-of-the-art Tom Hanks simulation coming out of the University of Washington. $1 billion for AI research, headed up by some superstars from Silicon Valley. Sam Altman from Y Combinator and Elon Musk, noted person afraid of AIs. So that's very interesting. And auto-tune for acting. All of this and more coming up right now. Okay, let's start with the Tom Hanks thing, because I think this is kind of hilarious, and I love that this is research coming out of a university pretty close to me. So the idea is they have built this three-dimensional model of, well, starting with Tom Hanks, several different celebrities, and they have mapped what is basically the personality of that celebrity's facial structure, which is a combination of, you know, the musculature, the skeleton behind it, and movements and tics and kind of the sort of default state that is projected out. So they've been able to map basically a floating kind of freaky Tom Hanks face, and they have mapped him to the emotions and conversations of other people, other famous people like Daniel Craig and George W. Bush, among others, and they have matched that sort of facial appearance and personality, essentially. What makes Tom Hanks look like Tom Hanks is the title of this. And there's an interesting abstract that you can read if you look up that exact title. And the idea is basically using this method to enable the mapping of any kind of audio and really the movement of any person with another person and make it appear as if though it's naturally being spoken by the face that's being simulated. So you have simulated Tom Hanks talking with the text and facial animations of a video of Daniel Craig or the former president of the United States. And all of that is mimicked pretty well. It's super interesting. So I highly recommend checking that out. There's a full paper that they're presenting apparently at the International Conference on Computer Vision in 2015. So that's kind of cool. So if you study hard, stay in school, you can publish things based on Tom Hanks' face. That's good to know, and I think it's good for the education system as a whole. All right, I wanted to open with something that was a little more fun because we're digging into the more serious thing, which is the Paris Climate Talks and the Paris Climate Agreement, which is basically an agreement to keep the rise in global temperatures at or around an additional 2.5 degrees Celsius, which at first glance, if you're not familiar with thinking about climate and temperature in sort of a systemic way, doesn't seem that frightening. But, you know, 2.5 degrees of Celsius increase globally in average temperatures is massive. We're talking about huge sea level rise. We're talking about massive increase in desertification in places that are at risk in Asia and in Africa, places that have already had trouble subsisting with their existing agricultural output. We're talking about massive increase in the intensity and strength and duration of storms that we normally experience. I'm talking more bigger tornadoes, more bigger monsoons, typhoons, hurricanes. We're talking about exaggerated dry spells and massively exaggerated rain spells at the same time. Just a huge increase in the swings of extreme temperature variations. So these small changes on what is a large range of what our temperatures could be, those average increases add up and create systemic changes that could just completely throw a wrench into the way that we understand climate as it is today in the modern world. The places where moderate temperatures, temperate zones are, would shift. Cities that currently exist on the seaboard would, for the most part, all be threatened. Everywhere you are, every coast, we're talking about small countries like the Seychelles being completely engulfed, being basically entirely underwater. They are only a few feet above sea level. There is nothing they can do. It is an island. They can't build it any higher. They're simply going to be washed away. That's thousands of people that need to be relocated from land that won't exist anymore. And millions, if not hundreds of millions, who will be directly impacted by sea level change. So, all of that in context, that is the ballgame. That is what we're talking about. But the pledges that were reached at the Paris Climate Talks were, in general, not that aggressive. We're trying to cap the increase in temperature at 2.5 degrees Celsius. And that is still going to leave us in the lurch. That means a lot of bad things are going to happen if this trend continues to 2030, to 2050. And by that time, a lot of these changes are irreversible, at least for a long period of time, because there's a lot of natural feedback loops that happen. When that ice melts and gets into the sea, that ice doesn't just get recreated in a single season if we manage to turn this thing around. We're talking about decade-long cycles. We're talking about 100-year cycles. We're talking about permafrost melting, methane that's trapped in the ocean being released that we can't just put back into the ground again. So we have 195 countries all agreeing to basically, on their own, go out and set individual methods and goals and targets internally that work for developing countries, that work for developed countries. The ballgame previously was developing countries had no interest in making huge systemic changes to their economies in order to fight climate change when they saw that the developed countries basically use this model to get to that level of wealth that they're currently at. So what is their incentive to cut off their own growth, their economic growth, when they are at their most vulnerable and need that growth in order to bring hundreds of millions of people out of poverty and into what is effectively a new middle class, when these developed nations who have already reached this level are looking down at them and saying, hey, you can't build that cheap power plant, you can't sell these cars, you can't use this methodology that we basically bootstrapped ourselves with. And so part of what happened in these climate talks is $100 billion was set aside to go to the developing nations from the developed nations to help with these changes. And that's good. All of these things are good. Consensus in any sense of the word compared to what happened at the Copenhagen climate talks, which was pretty much an unmitigated disaster, is that people have agreed that this is a huge systemic problem and that countries, if anything is ever going to get done, will need to set some of these goals internally. But with a global goal of bringing the overall average temperature rise down to the set target. Now, the individual plans agreed on by all of the countries added up don't actually bring us quite to that target. So the idea is people will come back every 5 years and we'll try to recalibrate, throw more money towards developing countries. Hopefully there are new advances and breakthroughs in alternative energy technologies, and you know, maybe we can scrub the air, or there are changes to the way that we run with our agricultural development. The idea is we do this iteratively, but it doesn't seem like it's quite enough. It's a good first step, and it's a good thing that anybody managed to agree at all in a sort of unanimous way, and that I find very impressive. But I also find it terrifying that we are essentially relying on everyone to police themselves and hoping that technology just improves on its own. There are a few other facts that I think make me a little bit optimistic. And one is that in the past year, the increase in the amount of capacity for renewable energy in the world went up by about 16%. And that's a huge increase. If you compound that over several years, if we can maintain that growth, that is a huge increase in the amount of renewable energy, alternative energy sources that we can use that are clean, that are not contributing to the production of CO2. and other energy sources were growing at a maximum of 3%. So you see this huge leapfrogging. I think there is a chance that we have entered into a stage in development globally that the technology is good enough, that solar panels are good enough, that wind power is getting good enough, that those technologies will simply improve on their own. There doesn't need to be a huge financial incentive because they're simply just a better deal. And we're going to hit that tipping point soon, I hope. And so prevailing trends, with any luck, will allow that to coincide with all these efforts that are happening globally. But I think it's scary, and I think relying on the fact that progress for progress's sake over time will happen is a dangerous game to play. And that's coming from somebody who is generally a technological optimist. But there we go. I hope it works out, and I hope things keep improving, but it's something that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on. And you can be sure there's people out there who are financially incentivized not to keep a very close eye on it and make sure we don't actually achieve these goals. So, all right, I'll leave my ranting on the climate to that, and we'll move on to something just a little bit more interesting and happy. What do Sam Altman, Elon Musk, Reid Hoffman, Peter Thiel, Jessica Livingston, and AWS all have in common? They are all tech funders of a new initiative called OpenAI. And this thing is super well funded. We're talking $1 billion right out the gate, set aside for these guys to research AI in an open way. It's a nonprofit, and all of the research results from this institution are going to be public, which I think is pretty cool. We have a lot of companies that are working on some form of artificial intelligence in some way or another, or augmented intelligence, or machine learning, things that can basically improve or vaguely mimic human cognitive tasks. Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, all those big guys, car companies, you know, Uber's probably working on it. Tesla is definitely working on some kind of intelligence for their cars to drive themselves. So a lot of this stuff is happening in the private sphere. And we're probably reaching a point where this technology is becoming pretty well developed. Or potentially, you know, there's enough money behind it now. We've got enough processing power behind it in all of these different companies that people are going to start making headway in some way. Now, there is a lot of disagreement in the field of artificial intelligence about how we are going to advance and whether or not we are even making real advances towards artificial intelligence with what has been built, whether or not we're just kind of mimicking things. You go back to the supercomputer that was built by IBM to be extremely good at chess, Deep Blue, and it won, or it had the ability to crush any opponent purely because at any point in time, it was able to calculate almost every single possible move that was kept in its database, historical database of games played by famous chess masters throughout history. It was basically a brute force system, but we finally had all that technology that could be stored in what was essentially a tiny server farm, right? So there's disagreement about whether or not that's really artificial intelligence or whether or not that's a more brute force, not really sophisticated solution. So you have things like machine learning, algorithms that teach a computer to make assertions based on the knowledge that it already has and create these complex relationships, mimicking the way that the brain thinks. So you have Watson that's probably operating in that capacity, and it, you know, competed on Jeopardy and responded with natural language phrases, and it makes inferences, and it tries to understand speech, and its knowledge builds on itself. And that's really exciting. So that kind of machine learning, teaching something to learn so that it can teach itself, could be an avenue for artificial intelligence to really grow in crazy ways. But the point is, $1 billion is now sitting around so that research for artificial intelligence can be directed in a way that is beneficial to everybody. Now, Elon Musk has said a lot about how he worries about a bad AI that is not looking out for the best interests of humans. So he is putting his money where his mouth is, and he wants all this research to be open, and he wants the goals of this organization to basically work around artificial intelligence that wants to do good for people and with people and can't really be taken advantage of. In their discussions about Sam Altman and Elon Musk had several interviews where they talked a lot about Google, how Google is a huge leader here. Obviously, it's a competitive advantage for Google to have good artificial intelligence, but all of that is kept secret. They've acquired a lot of companies that have been working in this field, and all of that knowledge has been kept internally at Google. And their motto, do no evil, really has not held as true as maybe people would have liked. And so the idea that keeping this information open, shared between anybody who can use it, is really kind of a cool thing. So they're building a team of researchers, top people in their field, and they've got all this money to work with. But their operating costs are probably going to be incredibly low at the offset, because we're just talking about people sitting in offices and starting research and documenting things and creating a public body of work that people can share and build off of. So it's basically the beginnings of a research institute, which is pretty exciting, and one that has huge financial backing and has a mission that I can totally get behind. Because I want artificial intelligence to sit in my ear, and I want to ask it questions, and I want it to make me look smart, and I want it to do it altruistically. So hopefully they can do some very cool stuff with that. It's exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing just what comes out of there. Although it may be a few years before we start seeing the fruits born from this tree. But exciting nonetheless. Are you a bad actor? I'm probably a pretty bad actor. I think most of us are not that great. I think most of us are also not very good singers. I think all of us would enjoy additional tools to help us become better at all of those things. So what if I told you that there was something coming out of Disney Research Labs that allowed you to auto-tune your facial performance, even the audio of your performance? Somebody records you doing a take, and you watch it back and you go, ah, that's awful. I should totally have been happy in that scene. You know, I should have gone from angry to happy, but instead I went from angry to excitedly angry, and that's weird for the scene. So they have this technology that they've been working on called Face Director, continuous control of facial performance in video. And what this does is it's basically a software that analyzes video of a performance, and it keyframes it. It matches up sort of the key matching elements in two performances and allows you to sort of scrub between them, like one would scrub through an audio file. And if you do two takes, you can pick the best part of two separate takes, and it will meld them together into your ideal performance. It can do this for people who are, you know, sitting in a room in exactly the same environment. It can do this for people who have a moving scene where they're walking through scenery. It tracks your face specifically and the output of what you are doing, your expressions, everything, and sort of builds this mathematical model that allows them to splice these things together. And it's super uncanny. I highly recommend going and looking this up online. It's on YouTube. It's called Face Director. And they scrub through several different attempts of people just working through some simple acting scripts and different takes where they're angry, where they're happy, and they can mix and match them into one seamless performance. And just toggle it up and down. Absolutely mind-boggling. And I can see at some point some directors being very interested in being able to use this technology. Imagine being able to record an entire film in two separate tones with an actor acting in two separate ways, and then you just pick the one that you want or alternate between the two at whichever level you would like. Super interesting research. This is another entry into the same conference that the earlier technology I talked about was, the International Conference on Computer Vision. So I have a feeling that even more interesting stuff will be coming out of there. So I'll be keeping an eye out for that and share it with you guys if I find it. That's a wrap for today. Thanks for tuning in for episode 9 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. If you guys want to check out some of these sources, Go to johancodes.com. The latest post for this particular episode will have links to a lot of the stuff that I talked about today. And if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Johan Benedict. Otherwise, I will see you guys very soon. Take care. Music provided under Creative Commons license by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.